Good morning, and thanks for joining us here in Arena 2. We're talking about multi-tenancy. To get started, I do a quick introduction to myself. I'm Phil Mayer. I do recognise some faces in the room, which is good, because I've been here at Microsoft for, yes, Michael, stop smiling, 22 years at Microsoft, part of the furniture. First joined the company when I was product manager for, do you remember those little things like OS 2? And LAN manager, communication server. So that was my little products back in 1990. But then in 1995, this little thing happened called the interweb. Yeah, I know the internet was around before that, but the whole HTML thing. So I had the opportunity to go and work on things like Internet Explorer and IIS. And then after that, got the chance to work on things like hosted exchange for multi-tenancy. Any of you run a hosted exchange multi-tenant environment? Great, there's a few hands that have gone up. Multi-tenant SharePoint, multi-tenant Link. And then, for my sins, they gave me SPLAR. What's SPLAR? Well, that is actually a really, really important licensing model that underpins a multi-tenanted, hosted world. Now, I appreciate that some of the people in the room are not necessarily service providers. And to just help me to balance this presentation, I wouldn't mind a quick show of hands in terms of who is a hosting service provider out there? Okay, it's hard with the light, but yep, that's good. That's nearly half of the room. I'm also intrigued because I have tried to tailor the presentation for a couple of other communities, which is government organisations who are running multiple agencies in a single data centre. So governments with multiple agencies. There's a few there. Excellent. And also tried to focus on large enterprise organisations who are trying to consolidate different departments and also potentially different sub-companies or entities, affiliated companies, into a consolidated data center. So I've got a couple of hands in the enterprise space. Good, so I'll have something for you as well. Perfect. So the objective today is to touch in two real halves. I've got, you know, nothing like two halves, better than three halves, but two halves to this presentation. The first half I'm going to touch on the aspects to do with Windows Server and System Center as it relates to multi-tenancy, slightly higher level, some 300, some 250 sort of content. And then the back end of the session will focus as a deep dive into network virtualization, which to me is the number one feature for multi-tenancy. And I get carried away, so I'm about to go and tell you all about it. I've got to slow down and pace myself. So I want to give you a key understanding of the IP virtualization model behind that and highlight some of the deployment scenarios as well. Now, there has been a lot of features out there and a lot of coverage, and different people and different views have the views of their top 10 features. This is an article that came out recently in terms of what they see as the top 10 key features in Windows Server. You read lots of different magazines, talk to different people, they're going to have different things that appeal to them. For me, working with service providers for the last 17 years, this is cool times for us. This, to me, is the first time that Microsoft actually listened to the service provider community, listened to the needs around multi-tenancy, and delivered. Really has delivered big time. Set a whole new bar. So I work in this space on a day-to-day basis around service delivery and automation, application management, infrastructure management. Spend most of my time talking around System Center, working in partnership with different hardware vendors, compute, storage, and network vendors to deliver the sorts of services that sit inside Windows Server 2012 now. And these are kind of the primary workloads that I discuss with this community. And you can probably create some affinity yourselves in terms of the workloads with which you work. Whether it's simple VM hosting or cloud hosting, database hosting, app hosting, a la hosted Exchange, hosted SharePoint, hosted Link, or is, as in, hosting things like CRM applications, or SAP, or Oracle, some of those other applications in the world. Web hosting is an area that we've spent a lot of time on, and last night I had an opportunity to share with many of you, or some of you who turned up to a session, some of the services that we're bringing for high-scale web services built on top of Windows Server 2012. And an area that we're just developing, it's a little nascent at the moment in terms of service provider community, and we've been doing some preliminary investigations with the local community and getting some local feedback, is desktop hosting. Certainly with consumerization of IT, this is an area that we Microsoft and the service provider community need to embrace and to enable so that people with iPads or Androids or Surface devices can have their own devices and brought those in. So these are my top 10 in Windows Server 2012. I'm not going to go into all of them in depth today. In fact, I'm going to pick out a few. I'm going to pick out quality of service and resource metering because I think they're two of my favourites that come through, and we'll have some demonstrations of those shortly. But my number one, my absolute favourite, is network virtualization, which we're going to spend half of this morning on. But, you know, high scalability in IIS 8. We've done some amazing things with a technology codenamed Antares. I don't know if you're aware, we acquired some people from an entity called Website Panel, which used to be called .NET Panel. Those individuals came into our organisation and they've brought with them a lot of IP around, or knowledge anyway, the IP we actually put into the CodePlex open source community, but their intelligence has now been applied on a project called Antares, which is high scale, high reliability web services, part of IIS 8. Storage spaces, pretty darn cool as well. Data deduplication, Jeff Alexander, who's the owner of the event, he'll be talking on that later today, so I don't need to cover it. And some of these other areas are actually covered in a lot of detail in other sessions. And I know that storage migration and snow, shared nothing migration is also covered in other sessions. So I'm going to focus on those areas that haven't been. Now, whilst the topic area for today is Windows Server 2012, a lot of what I see in Server 2012 can't be realized without System Center. In fact, my key topic, network virtualization, whilst it is a function of Windows Server 2012, good luck trying to implement it without System Center. Good luck. You really need System Center 2012 SP1 specifically, which beta dropped last night, to be able to do what I'm going to talk about later. But there are some very, very cool things over and above that for the service provider community that they're really embracing System Center 2012. You know, the management of not only virtual environments, but physical environments, because in some instances, you do need to have physical workloads, not just everything virtualized. Multi-tenancy is a component that has also come inside System Center, the awareness of multi-tenancy. And down the bottom right-hand corner, monitoring consoles and customizable dashboards. Now, last night, 6:30, was tough, I know. 6:30 after a long day is tough to turn up to a session. But we did talk about a topic which is called SPF, Service Provider Foundation. Who's heard of SPF? See, only a few hands. And yet that is an amazing piece of technology for the service provider community to enable multi-tenancy. And maybe if I digress for a moment, if you're interested in what it is a piece of technology that sits inside the service provider's data center with an OData interface, a REST OData interface, so that customers are able to interface to your environment in an on-behalf-of manner. They don't have to be part of your AD as a service provider. And the on-behalf-of means that you've got an audit trail knowing when a customer has actioned the creation of a VM or a cloud service, and then you obviously need full permissions in your data center to do that, but we have a full audit trail of who that is being executed on behalf of. It's a claim-based authentication model that exists between the customer and your data center. And I'm conscious of time. The last two points is, firstly, we give you a portal which looks like Azure. Who's seen the VM Azure portal? Yep. If you haven't, just go to windowsazure.com, sign up for a trial account, create a VM. We give the code to you as service providers to do exactly what Azure does in terms of VM creation and website creation. And the second thing we give you is an updated version of App Controller for the end customer to use to connect into your data center using the same control panel for managing their private cloud, the same control panel for managing a public cloud as Azure, and to manage resources that exist in your service provider data center with the ability to move between. I digress. Lots of content on the right-hand side in other sessions. I'm going to focus on the left-hand side, which is going beyond virtualization. And it's really going beyond server virtualization and looking at network virtualization. You guys know this slide very, very well. But this slide, when I continually to see it presented, what's it talking about? Servers. Servers, servers. It's all about servers, isn't it? Server this and server that. Where's the network? To be honest, I think the network has really lagged. As we've moved towards cloud services, it is the area that has been left behind in terms of innovation, creativity. We're still using design philosophies on networking that are 30 years old. It's like thinking of, as an analogy, I'm going to use a phone analogy. Imagine if you had to get a different phone if you went to America, if you wanted to go to a different state. You know in serverland you can go from one physical machine to another physical machine, and that virtual machine says, yeah, I can talk to the same memory space, I can talk to the same LAN, that's all good. But when we're on an IP address, what do we get? Oh, you're on that IP address. Oh, wow, you're moving to another machine. Got to have a whole new IP address. Think of the phone. Oh, you're sitting in Sydney. You want to go to the Gold Coast. Oh, you better take that phone with you because you've got to have a whole new number. It's craziness. So I'm sorry to say, I think networking has lagged. And so very exciting. At the end of the session, I'm going to cover more on network virtualization. The idea here is any service, whether it's a web service, an application service, desktop service, on any server, can move to any cloud, whether that's a private cloud, a public cloud, or your service provider cloud. So very passionate about enabling this. Any service, any server, any cloud. If we look at how many people think about consolidating their data centers today, a private cloud data center, and I've reached out to the enterprise space on this slide, challenged myself, and thought about a sales, finance, and R&D. And in many cases, large organizations do operate this way. They've got a separate DC for their sales division, a different DC for finance, and another DC for R&D. And so the idea of consolidation is a really basic one, which is having a separate rack. Okay, so now we're sharing network, and now we're sharing concrete, and we're sharing power, but we're still talking about separate physical blades and separate IP address ranges, and even setting up VLANs to support that in a virtualized context. What we really want to get to is this seamless data center extension, so that there's more than one enterprise, fluid, dynamic, scalable, elastic, moves into these public cloud or service provider cloud environments, so that it should be seamless and dynamic. Let me just touch on some of the key challenges that we've heard from you as service providers. Whether you're a government, we've had the same feedback from government, we've had the same feedback from enterprise customers that I've been invited to go and talk to, and certainly the guys I work with on a daily basis. They're saying challenges today are around full isolation between different workloads and different customers. I want complete workload isolation. Their database completely separate. Their environment separately. Granular metering. Now, what's my chargeback, what's my showback ability? I want to know how much CPU they're using, how much disk they're using, how much bandwidth they're using. I want to be able to do that as a chargeback model. I want to accommodate scenarios where there might be the need to bring in custom quotas based on certain types of services or licensing models that they're consuming. You know, SQL Server Enterprise is more expensive than SQL Server Standard Edition. How do I do a chargeback on that? I want to guarantee a level of allocation of shared resources. I hear from service providers all the time about how they build out a new server, they put in a tenant, and they get a noisy neighbor. It destroys the performance, destroys the SLA because some particular user, some particular workload in there has got noisy and taken out the performance of the neighbors in that same physical host. And then finally, the big one, it's not easy to move VMs from a customer's corporate environment to the cloud. In many instances, they have to instantiate new instances of cloud infrastructure and dynamic infrastructure with whole new IP addresses to be able to support that. And who's heard of license mobility through software assurance, which is a thing we introduced in July? Excellent. So how can we make that easy for people? You know, you've got all these licenses you bought, but you hear from these fabulous service providers about the opportunities they give you in terms of reducing cost and increasing response time, etc. And yet you've got to completely reconfigure those licenses. You've got to completely rebuild them. You've got downtime as you rebuild machines. Well, what we're going to talk about eliminates that. So finally, in this case, technology is catching up with a licensing change that we've introduced. So these are some of the key cloud requirements that we've seen, kind of the things that I'm going to drill down a little bit more on. Secure isolation, resource metering, QoS, and VM mobility. In terms of secure isolation, I know there's been presentations on this. Stu Fox did one yesterday, who went to the Windows Server What's New session. Yeah, plenty of hands went up, and he talked about secure isolation. He talked about the extensible switch. For sake of time, I'm going to push through these slides. They'll be there for you to look at. But much of the content in other sessions I know has covered it, but it's still an important one for multi-tenancy. If we look at the areas that I'll touch in terms of the extensible switch, the PVLANs, the ACLs, the ARP spoofing, and DHCP guarding, and the trunks. So let's drill down on those very briefly. Look, PVLANs is quite an interesting approach to reduce the number of VLANs that you need to configure in an organization. So this little diagram here is representative of that. So I've got a single subnet, and yet I've got multiple VLANs running across that. You've got the way in which you can set up your modes. You've got an isolated, a promiscuous, and a community-based. You can see that in the case of the purple ones, they've been defined as isolated. So those two guests are not allowed to talk to one another because they've been defined as isolated. The blue one that's defined there is promiscuous, interesting name, and they're able to exchange data with anything that's going on in that VLAN, in that definition. And you can see the PVLAN IDs 2, 4, and 5. So you can see that the 2 is the general primary VLAN, and then we've got the secondary VLAN IDs in that same subnet, which is the 4 and 5, and who can talk to who on that. Look, there are some savings in that, right? You know, VLANs have got limits in terms of the number you can divide, and certain numbers of our service providers are hitting those limits. They're hitting those limits of 4,000 VLANs in their environment. You talk to someone like a Rackspace or a GoDaddy, they're hitting those limits. So they need to find a way. PVLAN is one way that they can at least reduce the number of VLANs they need in their organization. But I'm going to show you an even better way shortly. ACLs. Stu Fox did a great demonstration of this the other day, so I'm not going to labor the point, but he showed how he was able to deny access to a NIC under access control permissions, and he was able to re-enable that in the traffic flow. So that's great to be able to deny and allow certain users based on access control lists to do that. Spoofing. Yep, service providers have got to watch for this. You get those, again, nasty tenants inside a multi-tenant environment, and they suddenly load up a DHCP server, and suddenly you get all this craziness on your network. Well, we've got guards against that sort of thing happening. ARP spoofing, people who pretend, masquerade. They stuff back a false MAC address to somebody else's packet on the net, and then they start intercepting workloads. You don't need that sort of thing happening in your environment where you're trying to offer a secure and reliable and extensible environment. You need to, security is achieved by these sorts of spoofing protection mechanisms that are built in Windows Server 2012. Again, Stu did a really good job of this, so I'm not going to dissect it in too much detail. He talked about filter extensions, he talked about switch extensions, and he touched on the areas where they come from in terms of what Microsoft provides in the orange pieces, what third parties provide in the yellow pieces. So a little bit more in terms of the sorts of extensions that are defined. The first one is really a read-only extension, which is where you've got inspection of network packets and you're not altering anything. The next one is, again, a packet filter. This is a packet filter, more designed for security scenarios, modifying and dropping packets. And then you see these third-party forwarding ones. Now, a point that needs to be made is you can only run one of those forwarding ones on the environment. You can't have multiple forwarding. Gets a bit confusing. So there's some examples of third parties who've introduced network forwarding extensions to the Hyper-V extensible switch. And then finally, the firewalling one. And there's a little bit more data again. I'm conscious of time. I didn't want to delete these slides because I think they're good reading for you later on. Let's get into resource monitoring, which I think is a key one. You want to know what's going on in that cloud. You want to know who's using those resources, who's consuming data. You've got static items that are going on. You've got static items, how much physical disk has been allocated to that user, how many vCPUs. You've got dynamic components, network going up and down, network going up and down, storage being consumed and reduced. And in a way, in a dynamic world, if you're going to charge back on disk consumption, you don't want to run that utility when they're gone and deleted all their files before the end of the month. You want to be able to know that they peaked at a certain point of disk utilization, right? And record that. And that's what this resource metering right down at the OS level does, is be able to capture that they've peaked their disk usage, they've peaked their VCP usage at a particular point, and that's what they get charged for. Now, there's cunning customers out there who'll do things like crank up their disk drive and use it all, and then just before the end of month billing cycle, they'll remove it all. So these sorts of mechanisms built right in the operating system to charge back are critical. And show back is another term. Show back tends to be used in an enterprise space. There's a whole range of counters that we've introduced, new performance counters around SMBs, RDMA, network traffic, and more. And these are some of those metrics there in terms of a multi-tenanted, multi-resource pool and the ability to span across multi-tenants to do that. Some of the features, resource pools compatible across all Hyper-V operations, and the access control is obviously maintained. So here's a simple process that you might think about defining in your organization. Most service providers in this country today are still on a monthly billing cycle, I'd say. Yep. So this would be the sort of cycle that you'd run end of month. Somebody's created a VM. They've enabled, you obviously would enable resource metering in this environment. You'd wait to the end of the billing people. You'd query the resource reports. You'd bill the client and you'd reset the meter. Makes it really easy to track. Now, some people are moving towards a more dynamic, you know, almost minute by minute, hour by hour charge model. So it's just a case of running this cycle more frequently than every month. Now, it's not all components that are in your environment of monthly billed either. So somewhere, you know, SPLA is a monthly licensing model. So you've got to be cognizant of trying to tie in the resource metering system to not only your technology, but potentially overriding factors such as licensing models. At this point, I'm going to invite David Starenberg up to the stage, and David's going to give us a demonstration of the resource metering capabilities. David, welcome.
Thank you, Phil. You've
got some shirts to give away, haven't you?
Got some more shirts to give away. So
if you're up the back, you're not going to get them. You've got to be down the front here.
Yeah, first 10 rows only.
So, David, tell us about where you're from.
Okay, so as Phil mentioned, my name is David Starenberg, and I work for a hosting company just up the road in Brisbane called Imantra. I guess my role there is one of systems implementation, which is a strange-sounding title, but it means I spend a lot of time looking into new products and how we can leverage those to gain efficiencies, mainly through areas of automation, which we can then flow on to provisioning, deployment, that sort of thing.
So what do you think of your favourite features that are coming out in this next release?
Well, so yeah, we've also spent the last year or so on the Windows Server 2012 TAP and more recently the System Center 2012 TAP. Mm-hmm. I guess personally, and as a hosting company, the key features of Server 2012 that we are most interested in are things like Hyper-V replica and certainly the improvements in live migration. So things like shared nothing live migration is just fantastic. In the System Center space, SPF, obviously, and Orchestrator. We're finding Orchestrator is fantastic for automation. If you can do it through PowerShell, you can automate it through Orchestrator, and it's great. Okay. And obviously NetworkVert, so things like quality of service and resource metering as well. As a hosting company with many tenants, we obviously have to bill them, and these things make them much, much easier.
Well, give us a look at resource metering.
Okay, just bear with me. My laptop has obviously gone to sleep.
And I'll flick you across when you're ready.
I think we should be right to go.
Okay.
Hopefully everyone can see this. It's not too bad. So resource metering. We've got a fairly simple PowerShell script here, which we're just going to step through to highlight what can be done with resource metering. First step here is to enable it. So it's not enabled on a host out of the box. So we need to switch that on first. So we're just going to get all our VMs and enable resource metering for them. A few VMs on this host. There we go. Now, here we're just going to do a measure VM against our demo SPF server, which is one of the VMs we have on this host. Step through that. There we go. We can get an idea of the resources that are currently being used by that VM. And then we just need to set this function here.
Now, you might want to explain some elements of what that function's about in terms of how you're changing traffic and what you're measuring.
So what we're doing here is assigning some costs against the resources that are allocated to this VM. So I think we've got we're working out the average memory usage and then assigning a price per megabyte, same with the CPU usage, and then the network traffic in and out of the box. So we're assigning costs against each of these counters.
And that comes down as that variable VM cost at the end.
It comes down as VM cost. Right. So let's just kick that off. Looks good. That's gone through.
There's no response to that because all we're doing is loading up that function into memory now, so that's available for usage from now on.
That's correct. So the last step here, we're going to run that function that we've just defined there, the calculate VM cost, against that VM which we are monitoring. Then it's quickly going to reset those counters, and then we'll run it again. So we should get two figures at the end here.
Theoretically, the second one should be lower than the first.
It should be, yes.
Just.
Perfect. Just. So obviously, we've reset. There hasn't been as much network traffic in that small time, but it's still got a charge associated with the memory that's been allocated to that machine or the CPU, the storage, etc.
Cool. Thank you.
That's resource metering. That's
excellent.
Very simple and easy.
Anybody tried resource metering with Server 2012 yet? No one. It's pretty easy to set up, as you can see, through those PowerShell. And PowerShell's a fantastic service. Now, 2,400 commandlets that exist in Windows Server 2012. And so there's some to get familiar with if you're going to do any resource metering. Get familiar with what's available in that particular enabling functions, being able to define cost metering functions, and then apply those across PowerShell, across the environment. One of the points... No, I haven't got to it yet. I'll get to it shortly. Thank you.
Oh, get you back to full
switch
screen.
Switch me to number two. Thanks. Six. Well, good. So now we're going to move on to QoS, quality of service. So some of the needs that we've heard from service providers is this idea of guaranteed levels of service. And I think even in enterprise environments, you get the same sort of need. You've got a particular department, probably the sales department or the managing director who wants better quality of service than anybody else in the business. So you've got to marshal off resources to them, make sure that they're getting the best performance you possibly can out of that shared environment. So what we put into Windows Server 2012 is this feature that allows you to set bandwidth limits specific to a particular port and each VM. So a little bit more on that. We've got two ways in which we can define that quality of service. You can either have relative or strict. So under relative, you can see that you're setting a weighting for each of the guests in the environment. Normal priority, high priority, and a critical workload. So you can have a weighting number like 1, 2, 4, 5, whatever it might be across that switch. In a strict, you're defining the actual megabytes that should be allocated to those particular tenants. It's a classic environment, that's why I've used the word tenant there, in the hosting space. In the hosting space, you would sell the customer 100 megabit or 200 megabit or 500 megabit path, and so that's then strictly enforced. This becomes critical when you're putting in a new physical host and you've only got one client running on that host. If they're getting a realized experience which is greater than what the SLA should be, they're going to complain when other tenants start to land on that same machine. So by using this quality of service, you are restricting them down to give an experience from day one on a brand new box, which will be consistent with what their experience might be in 6, 9, 12 months' time on that same box or even a different box. Now, an important point to make here is that when you define strict, there is no ability to do bandwidth over a subscription. Right, we don't permit that. It's not like oversubscribing memory. When it comes to bandwidth, we don't permit oversubscription on bandwidth. And another important point when you're using relative is it must be defined using PowerShell. All right, so you have to use PowerShell scripts to define relative bandwidth. But this is a really cool feature where you are trying to establish quality of service, meeting SLAs, that you can partition the different tenants and define their bandwidth, min, max, and other attributes. In fact, I think I did put a slide on some of that coming up. This is kind of over time, so if you take those columns 2, 3, and 4, they're kind of time representations, T1, T2, T3. And by definition, we've made some relative allocations of resources to VM storage, live migration, and clustering. You can see in the first column, T1 on the right, where we've had a bandwidth is available, each tenant takes as much as they want. So in a relative world, they are actually free to consume whatever is available from the network that is available to them. And in that case, you can see that there's a small amount of CSV happening, there's a fair amount of storage, there's absolutely no live migration happening, and yet the full bandwidth has been made available and used across that. When we start to get congestion, when we start to get high demand on the network, it returns back to where we've defined those relative variables. You can see those relative variables being defined at 30%, 40%, 20%, and 10%, hence 3, 4, 2, 1 across that spectrum when we have it. And then finally, when bandwidth becomes available again, it returns to being able to deliver all the bandwidth across those relative states. Cool. So why don't we have a quick look at QoS and how we enable that?
Yeah, let's have a look now. So those of you that were in those of you that were in Stu Fox's session yesterday would have seen a similar demo. So we're going to mix ours up a little bit just so it's not an exact copy of what we've seen. For those of you that don't know where to find network monitoring, this is just a Hyper-V host running Server 2012. And here underneath the network adapter properties, we've got the ability to enable bandwidth management and then set a minimum and maximum bandwidth. So you could obviously right-click on every VM that you've got here, configure those settings and go through. But as we keep getting told, PowerShell is the future. So this can all be done through PowerShell. And if you're managing servers, this one here, we've got about 30 VMs on it, you're really going to save a lot of time doing this through PowerShell. So we'll leave that unconfigured. Just drop back down to our VM host. So the VM we were just looking at was our demo web box. We've opened a share to this box. And we're just going to drag these ISOs across and start a copy. So you can see that's ticking along. It's not as fast as I'd like. And what we're going to do now is drop into the host. And we're going to run that PowerShell setting. So what we've done there is we've done a set VM network adapter on that demo web box. And we've limited it to 1 megabit. What we can see here, we switch back to our copy. And we can see that that's being throttled down to 1 megabit. So this is really good for your noisy neighbors, as Phil has mentioned before. Again, because it can be done through PowerShell, you can script this, you can automate this. You can have your settings through the day. At night when you're taking your backups, you switch it all off, get your backups done, switch it back on. You can plug this into your management and monitoring software. So if you pick up a VM on your network is using too much bandwidth, kick off a job through Orchestrator, you can get this right in. But we've decided this copy is going to be no major problems, so we'll let them finish. Set it back to 0, which is not set. And we should see our copy pick back up again. So again, like resource metering, it's very simple and easy to use. There's no interruption to the guest itself. You can turn this on and off on the fly. You can drop the speed. You can increase it. You can set minimums so that regardless of the amount of noise on the network, a VM is always going to get a minimum amount of bandwidth. So it's very flexible, very easy to use.
Cool.
That's QoS.
Thank you. You like that? Yeah.
It's good.
Thank you. It's cool. Very cool features. And indeed, critical features that our service provider community has been asking for.
Six.
Number six. Thank you. All right. The last topic area is VM mobility. And again, because I want to get to network virtualization, I'm going to punch through these slides very, very quickly, but they'll be available for you to look at, to review, and share with your colleagues who are not able to enjoy this wonderful event. I'm going to touch on network vert in detail in a moment, but I know other sessions have covered live migration, storage migration, and shared nothing. And was said by David, it's a hot area. And these areas, again, are really relevant to the multi-tenancy area in terms of being able to isolate different customers' workloads and different business units from one another. They have that flexibility of migrating from one environment to another. This is the area I'm going to drill down in detail, but as I said, I did this in two halves. So you can use this first part of the deck with the business guys in your organization, because you can use this bit of deck and help explain what we're trying to do with Microsoft in really simple terms. But the next bit I'm going to go down into packet flows. And you probably don't want to share that with somebody who's going to sign up for buying a whole bunch of Windows Server and System Center. But these are some areas that you can touch on. You know, one of the key areas we'll touch on is this idea of CA and PA, the customer address and provider address bases for tenants in network virtualization. So let me just get through this. The ability to have cross-premise connectivity. So we can take, you know, in terms of a contoso.com who's got a Sydney branch, contoso.com who's got a Melbourne branch, and they can even have a public cloud, and those subnets can span across the environment. You can have Woodgrove, Public Crown, two subnets, and being able to connect those to their Perth branch. I'm going to show you some packet flows for those examples, and you'll have much clearer understanding as a bunch of techies than some pretty pictures. Live migration, you've covered that to death. Who's seen live migration demos at this event? Yeah, you all have. Cool. Let's move on. Who's seen storage migrations at the event? Yeah, you've all seen that as well. Cool. Move on. Who's seen snow? Yeah, you've all seen snow as well. Okay, so we'll move on from snow. So let's get into what I like, my favourite. So this is part two, a focus on Hyper-V network virtualization. So we're going to go down another layer of detail. Private clouds, public clouds, service provider clouds, multiple customers on shared infrastructure, multi-tenant data centers. And the idea here that we can have secure isolation, dynamic service placement, which is that what we're trying to retrieve. Not just dynamic servers, but server placement with managing and taking care of IP addresses as well. And we've covered QoS and resource metering. And the challenges in building these clouds today are very limited workload mobility. The physical location is determining the network address. We all live with that, don't we? You know, IP address topologies limit the ability for me to be able to place those VMs. Very much like the analogy I gave of the phones. You wouldn't dare think that if you took your phone to America, you had to have another phone, that it wouldn't work there because of its address. It wouldn't be recognized. That'd be madness. Right? So why can't I have the same thing in a modern data center? So I can pick up a server, I can pick up a VM, run it in my environment, and then run it in a service provider's environment, or run it in a cloud environment. Why do I have to go change the IP addresses? And often that implication has implications down further about resource utilization. You're not able to maximize resource utilization because of that imposed limit around the IP addresses. You're not able to deploy those because of the server team, they need to talk to the network team. And the network team says, oh, I've got to go and do some VLAN configuration. It's going to take a while to get all that set up to be able to take your workload. Wait. So this interconnection between the server team and the net team. And I guess you could bring in another one as well, the database team as well. So how can we remove that congestion? How can we streamline? How can we put that down to become dynamic? The server and the network moving in an agile way. How can we support, you know, VLANs, frankly? They're just not suited for high-scale cloud topologies. When you're working with VLANs, you're working with production switches. That's risky business. That's walking tightropes over the Niagara Falls when you're playing around with this stuff. Number of times you've heard of system outages, nothing to do with the server, nothing to do with the OS. It's all been about how they've configured up the switches and the routers. This is tricky, tricky stuff. Those guys get paid megabucks, I know, to be able to deal with that dangerous area where they need to be extremely careful. And service providers particularly have found it difficult to onboard new customers to their infrastructure because certain applications are tied to IP addresses. Yeah, older applications. People have built into their solutions IP address configurations. And you're saying, oh, well, now you've got to have a whole new set of IP addresses when you come to me as a service provider. I don't want to do that. I'm the customer. I don't want to do that. I won't have to go and modify my apps and put in a whole bunch of new IP addresses. Can't you just give me that in your environment? Oh, no, we can't do that. Well, now you can. With network virtualization, you can. In terms of, the typical environment, different customers, fragmented, and they get consolidated. They just have the same number of racks, but they share a backplane. That's cool. A lot of savings in doing that. Lots of customers do that. Lots of service providers do just that. Take people's workloads and run them exactly the same number of racks, shiny new hardware, faster paths to disk, fiber channel SAN, the whole lot, much faster than they used to do. But really what we want to be able to do is this. Take those workloads, take those clients, and over time, one customer needs more, another customer needs less, we can actually move those VMs mobily across. And the IP networks that are necessary, the IP addressing, moves just as fluidly as those virtual machines move in that environment as well. So I like this little diagram. Had fun putting this one together. Look at the red ones, the red servers. They're the red guests. Okay? So there is that red guest. He's got his VLAN tag configured so he can get access. And we introduce another red box to that same rack, to the top of rack. So what have we got to do? We've got to go and add some tags to the top of rack switch. And so that red box on the left and the red box on the right are able to talk to one another. Ah, that wasn't so bad. What was that? Four balls? Four tags that need to be introduced to a reduction environment? Not so hard. Uh-oh. Left-hand side just filled up. No more capacity. Now got to go through the aggregation switches. Red customer wants another server. What do I do? How many balls? You watch. And she comes. What's the balls? That's a lot of work, man. That's a lot of configuration. That's a lot of risk if you miss one of those red balls. Suddenly one server's not talking to the other and the customer's screaming at you over the phone. What's going on? Server one can't see server two. What's going on? And that's all because of networking. We're still captured in the dark ages. We're still in the days before Windows 3.0 in terms of the way we're doing IP configurations. And VLAN tags have helped a lot. Now look, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying VLANs are bad. VLANs absolutely have their place. VLANs have their place around the idea of having a VLAN for management and a VLAN for storage. But how about having one VLAN for all guest traffic by using network virtualization? So the topology limits VM placement and requires lots of reconfiguration of production switches. To improve resource utilization on servers, we virtualize them, don't we? Absolutely, and that's been a joy. Thank you, VMware, for doing that for us, introducing that capability. Thank you, Microsoft, for taking it to another level. But what we need to do, therefore, is virtualize the network to get all the joy we have in server virtualization at a network level. And here we go. Blue VM, red VM, different customers. Virtualized. Physical server, not a problem. We've been able to do this for years. Blue server sees address space X with its applications. Red server can see address space X, not a problem. We accept that. Blue server sees a LUN, so can the red server see the same LUN. That's all good. Sees a NIC, but can't see the same IP address. So why can't we move into this world where we can run multiple virtual networks on the same physical network, each virtual network with the illusion that it is running as a physical network? It is illusion. It's not on the same physical network at all. Sorry, it's on the same physical network, but it thinks it's got its own little physical network. It's virtualized. Just like we virtualize servers, we now virtualize the network. Some of the benefits of that. If you're a workload owner, it means that it's seamless migration to the cloud. You can take your application with all its IP address configuration today, all its resource definition, pick that up, not change anything, and move it up. If you're an enterprise, you can run private clouds and consolidate efficiently across your organization. Yes, and there could be situations where you've got people running on the same IP address ranges in different DCs today and you're trying to consolidate. And again, the same issue service providers face, you might face in your own enterprise where they're running isolated, separate, but same IP address ranges, trying to bring them together. Stephen Parker from Newlease at the back and I were having a chat. How do I best describe this? If I asked everybody to put up their hand when I shout out their name. John. Right? There's a couple of Johns. How many Stevens in the room? See, I couldn't put you in the same room and have a conversation and use your names, right? Because you'd all get mucked up. Stephen. Yep, that's me. John. Turn around. So what if I could do that in a way that we could have a conversation in a data center, in a room, and we've got that clarity. Hosters. This is huge for them. It says to customers, bring your own IP. Bring your network topology. I don't care what your network topology is. Bring that in. We'll land that on your infrastructure. How cool is that? And then it means we can have scalable multi-tenancy. In the public cloud space, flexible VM placement, I can move the workloads around from rack to rack, server to server, blade to blade, data center to data center, site to site, because of the capabilities that we're giving you with network virtualization in Windows Server 2012. Let's push further and deeper now into the fundamentals associated here. So some first basic concepts. The customer's VM network There's one or more virtual subwebs are forming an isolation boundary. So we have a subnet, one or more of those, and they become the virtual subnets. The customer may have multiple VM networks. In fact, they might have the red, they might have the blue R&D department, and they might have the blue sales department. That's all good. We can accommodate that, the fact that they've got even separate subnets from one particular tenant, one particular customer. So the virtual subnet has a broadcast boundary. So in our multi-tenant data center, we can see that we've got the red network, which has got three subnets in it. We've got the blue sales network, which has got two subnets in it. And we've got the red corporation, which has got its own two subnets. And they're virtual subnets sitting inside this multi-tenant data center. So let's develop that. How do I get those customers onboarded into my multi-tenant data center? How do I take them from where they are today to the world of this multi-tenanted virtualized network environment? Here we have Blue Corporation with exactly the same address range as Red Corporation. 0.5, 0.7, 0.5, 0.7. I've got my data center. It's got a couple of hosts. I want to land those in this sort of configuration with these customer address spaces. 0.5s for blue, 0.5s for red, 7 for blue, 7 for red. And those are the kind of sample workloads that might be sitting there. You're going, Phil, how can that work? How can that work? So what we introduce is this idea of the provider address space and the customer address space. The customer's addresses are their original addresses, their original IP addresses. In the provider address space, our service provider is running those addresses, 4.11, 4.22. Okay. System center. Did I say system center before? I'm going to say it again, and I'll probably say it several more times. Don't try this at home without system center. It is a nightmare. We've done it with Windows Server 2012 before SP1. It takes hours. This is a system center enabled feature. Yeah, okay, it sits inside Windows Server. Yeah, you can run PowerShell scripts to do it.
Does it work with IPv6?
It works with IPv6 too. So we've got this ability to do the virtualization policies are enforced by System Center. System Center sees these workloads being migrated in. You're doing an import of the physicals into the environment, and a virtualization policy is applied. So now we're doing a mapping between their customer address space and the physical address space. And that then is being deployed into your data center, into the service provider's data center, in this particular case, in that configuration. One question I usually get, does this support multiple NICs? Yes, it does support multiple NICs. Does it support teaming? Yes, it supports teaming as well. But for simplicity, the rest of the presentation is just going to focus on a single NIC, single interface point, okay? How have we done this? We haven't done anything special here. All we've done is embraced the standard, right? Generic route encapsulation. That's all we've done. It was mentioned in the keynote. Generic route encapsulation. NVGRE. It's actually created by Cisco. Good job. But we've realized that using software, a software-defined network, we've built that using software, Windows Server, System Center together to create the ability to have scalable sharing of PAs across multiple VMs. So in this scenario, we've got different subnets, and we're able to, using a GRE key, we actually call it a VSID, we're able to take the traffic from the blue guy on the left-hand side in one host, move it across to the other host, and same for the red by using that group encapsulation, generic route encapsulation key, and deliver it down. So a little bit more detail on the architecture, how that's achieved. The network virtualization is absolutely transparent to the VM. The VMs have no idea. They still think they live in the physical world. They still think they're using the same IP addresses. Management OS traffic is not virtualized though, and so there you would see on the left-hand side where you might set up a separate VLAN or have a separate NIC being set up for management traffic. So that's to do things like live migration, storage, clustering type capabilities. You might want to configure a separate NIC for that, but you put all your client traffic, all the guest traffic, through a single or multi NIC teaming into that environment. Two key components is the Hyper-V switch, which you can see has got the access control list and isolation and all the privacy and security checks and making sure it happens, and the IP virtualization policy in Fortran and router, routing technology inbuilt. And it also talks to the system center host agent, which has got all that policy data. Yeah, sure, you don't have to run that, but please don't. Just get system center. Life will be a lot easier. And use the policies and tables that exist inside it. So let's have a look at some sample packet flows. So in this example, we're going to talk about a same virtual subnet in the same host. So we're going to have blue 1 trying to reach blue 2 with network virtualization. So it's the same physical host. So clearly our first point is that we're going to ask from blue 1, where is 0.7? We put that out to the Hyper-V switch, and it's allocated a VSID 501 and the network virtualization filter intercepts. And it says, right, we haven't actually put anything on the wire, have we? This is all internal to the server. And it responds to the ARP 24IP07, which was on VSID 501. Why are we putting all that in there? Security, security, security. Check, check, check. Yep, they're in the right VSID. Yep, we'll give them back MAC2. So MAC2 learns B1 learns MAC of B2. Right, so sending. Now I can send the data. And now out of band, so not on the network, this is done through System Center, the out of band traffic is the VSID 5001 being sent to the switch. And B2 receives that. Thank you very much. Got the right MAC addresses. And we're done. I like this one better. That's really simple because that was in host. I like this example, which is thinking about now moving between two different hosts. So it's the same virtual subnet. So it's B1 trying to get to B2, but they're now on different hosts. See, with similar sort of configuration, you can see the VSID 015001. So he's saying, where's 007? Okay, we broadcast that. Goes to the Hyper-V switch. I know that we've got to go up another level. We've got to go to the network virtualization filter. And it responds and says, I know where that other machine is. I learnt that. I've got that in my system center policy tables. I know where that stuff is. So I can give you the MAC address of B2 without even hitting the wire. There is no broadcast traffic on the network. Didn't have to hit the network with an ARP. Right? That's pretty clever. Because we built that data up when we created those VMs. We learnt the VSIDs, we learnt the IP addresses when those machines were created on those separate hosts. System Center has got the policy data. It knows the MAC address of B2. So therefore, we basically pass that back to B1, and now he knows where B2 is. So we want him to send to B2, basically sends it, he's got the right MAC address built in. The switch says, right, I now have got B1, B2's MAC addresses. I've now got to go to the Hyper-V switch. And the switch then says, I've got to go on the wire. So when it goes on the wire, you can see in the purple section, I've got my physicals, my PA addresses. So I'm actually going from host 4.11 to PA 4.22. But encapsulated in that is the MAC for B1, the MAC for B2, and the packet of communications necessary between the blue 1 and the blue 2 machines. And so that flows on. Now it's across. On the right-hand side of the diagram, it's coming in through 4.22, moving up through the virtual switch. I can deliver that, and there's a lot of checks that are going on here. There are a lot of checks that are happening at the VSID ACL enforcement layer to make sure somebody's not trying to spoof it, trying to masquerade as being somebody else, and checking that that packet is truly destined for from B1 to B2, and it's not some green 3 who's trying to get into blue 2. And so Blue 2 is able to receive that information. So what about different subnets, same host, but different VSIDs? Let's have a look at that one. Here we go. We're now looking for not 0.7, 007. We're looking for 1.7. So our 0.5, Blue 1, is looking for Blue 2, who's on a different subnet. What do we have to do? Well, we've got to go to a default gateway, don't we? We've got to go to get that information. So let's hit the switch. Let's go from the switch, the virtual response to the ARP with its own MAC address and the default gateway. Now, it's important to note that the Virtualization, the networked virtualization filter at the gateway level will not respond to a ping. So you might think, oh, I'm going to ping the default gateway, something we all do to make sure they're there. Well, in Hyper-V, those little guys will not respond to a ping. So don't try and test them. Ping the physical server, but don't try and ping the network virtualization filter. All right, so now we've not been exposed to the physical network again, have we? Why should we have to go out on the physical network? Why should we have to put traffic on the network? We don't have to. We keep that all self-contained with inside our single host. So now we've got that gateway information. We've got the information. We pass that gateway address back to B1, learns the gateway location. It's then able to say, right, I want to send this information to 1.7. Out it goes through the network virtualization filter. 5001, check that all again. And it verifies B1 and B2 are in the same rating domain, otherwise the packet's dropped. So we're doing checks again. And so to be able to get that information down. Some people will complain about that little yellow bit. They won't like that we've turned that to yellow. The purists in the world will say, ooh, you shouldn't be changing MAC addresses, you shouldn't be stuffing stuff in packets, but this is all within the host, so it shouldn't really be that much an issue. So then it flows back down, and B2 is able to receive the packet. My last example, a more complex example, but I can see, you can see where this is going. It's pretty cool stuff. Yeah? It is cool. I see some heads nodding. This is pretty cool stuff. So I'm now going from a different subnet, virtual subnet, to a different host. So again, we've got our friend 005 trying to get to 1.7 on different physical hosts. So again, we've got the default gateway because we're going outside of the subnet. We pump it up. We go on through. No ARB on the broadcast on the network, just as last time. We come back and say, OK, here's our default gateway. Up it comes again. No surprises. We know where to go. We hit the switch. We hit the virtualization filter. And onto the GRE. On the wire appears that. And again, the purists amongst you will go, what are you doing? You're stuffing in MAC 2 inside that packet. We have also had to stuff into it the 5222, because that's the different VSID, isn't it? The only way that that other physical server is going to pick that up is if that VSID matches what one of its VSIDs is, 522 or 6001. The only way that 4.22 is going to pick that packet up off the wire and processes it if there's a match. So we had to stuff 5222 into that packet. So now it lands over on host 2, and everything matches up because it's got 522, yep, that's valid. And I can now drop that down and deliver it to 1.7. So B2 is now able to receive that packet of information. All right. So that's helped you understand four different scenarios of how virtual subnets, same hosts, different hosts, different subnets, same host, different hosts can be accommodated, and how NVGRE at the packet level. Did you want to go that deep? You did. Oh, I see some nods. Excellent. So that helps you understand how it all works by going to that level of detail. More questions. Cool. Excellent. So it's pretty cool stuff that we've done there. And you can see the savings, can't you? VLAN nightmare's gone away. No more VLANing. Think about traffic on the network. Significantly reduced because we're encapsulating a lot and keeping it on host. I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think it's as heavy as IPsec. Which you've still got to do for security reasons. You're still going to want to use that for domain-level enforcements and things like that. And you're still going to have to implement data security models as well. But I don't know the specific answer to that. I'm certainly happy to find out. So I've got a little demo, and because playing with networks, I don't tend to like to run over Niagara Falls, I'm just going to play this as a video stream. Gives me a chance to rest my voice as well. Oops, I forgot to plug the wire in. Here it is. Sorry, mate.
Without changing VM's IP address and highlight several new features along the way. Here I have my physical network set up with two IP subnet, 192.168.1.0 and 192.168.2.0. These are the addresses used in the physical networks. And we have two hosts in the first subnet and one host in the second subnet. Let's switch over to the customer view. You will see that I have onboarded two customer networks. The important thing here is that each customer can now bring multiple subnets into the cloud, and we support forwarding without requiring an external gateway or router. This setup, we have five VMs for the blue networks, and you can see their corresponding IP addresses from the three subnets, and only one red VM, which overlaps in IP address with the first blue VM. To demonstrate cross-subnet live migration, I'm going to start a continuous ping between the two VMs while migrating the destination to a different physical subnet. Let's switch over to the VM view. Notice that the ping is from 10.0.2.2 to 10.0.1.4 across two virtual subnets, with the forwarding is done by the network virtualization module. Also note that with System Center 2012 SP1, we can now support VMs using DHCP to acquire IP addresses and network configurations through VMM. Now let's start the ping and switch back to VMM for migration. See that 10.0.1.4 is now in subnet 2. We can migrate this VM by simply dragging the VM to a different physical subnet. Start the migration. While the migration is ongoing, during the brownout period, the ping will continue to work. As the blackout period starts, we will see some packet loss because the VM is paused and removed from the source host and will be resumed on the target host shortly. Now the migration is done and VMM updates the virtualization policy, you can see the ping starts working again automatically. And we can see that the VM is moved from subnet 2 and is now in subnet 1. That's our cross-subnet live migration demo. Without changing VM addresses, and the network connections continue to work. Thank you.
Pretty cool stuff. That can help out in your enterprise environments, government environments, service provider environments to give you that elasticity, that flexibility in networks. Absolutely fantastic stuff. So just to one of the other questions I get is, oh, great, so I go and do this Hyper-V virtualization stuff. How do I get to the worlds that are outside of it? How do I start moving from, you know, a CA address space out to a physical world? Well, we have a gateway, the Hyper-V network virtualization gateway. So this bridges between your virtualized and your non-network virtualized environments. So that little gateway product is available either through Windows Server 2012, or indeed there are many network appliance manufacturers who are building these sorts of high-performance, high-scale virtualization gateways as well. So that's pretty cool. So whether you're going to non-virtualized resources, to the internet, or even site-to-site VPN configurations, this could be a useful attribute to install into the network as well. So that's good news. Happy about that? Because I'm sure you all had that question. Right, yeah, of course you did. What about security? Well, data security is absolutely still the responsibility of the VM. We're not touching the VM. The virtualization of the server and all the necessary security stays exactly where it is and belongs, inside the servers themselves, inside those VMs. The server and the domain isolation, that's all IPsec, and we understand the amount of compute you need to allocate to do IPsec type stuff. And so there's some offloading with Windows Server 2012 that can help. And your obviously application level protection is still through your certificates, SSL. So these are just some of the deployment scenarios that we've seen already done with Windows Server 2012. And yes, they were hard. They were hard because we didn't have System Center SP1, which is the necessary thing to realize this as easily as what I've articulated. So here's a sample that is running inside the development area at Microsoft. The Windows Server team on the right-hand side have a consolidated data center for all their hosts. They have a number of hosts and different subnets, and they use the Hyper-V network virtualization gateway to get what we call inside Microsoft CorpNet. So that's all of our domain controllers, our SQL, our email systems sit on the left-hand side. And so they've configured that up, handcrafted it using PowerShell. Another representation is this. So this is a deployment diagram of Hyper-V network virtualization at Microsoft. In terms of our back-end data center network, connecting into corporate CorpNet, the management servers, the DHCP servers, and then the front-end components as well. And you can see the PA and the CA address spaces that are represented in each of the guests. Okay. This is a little sample that we put together at great effort for TechEd in North America. So this was done in partnership with HP, and we wanted to demonstrate live migration of a link workload from the top rack to the bottom, from the top blade to the bottom blade, to the middle blade. And so we set up a whole bunch of Hyper-V virtualization PowerShell scripts to configure it. Okay, it's not that complex. It's only those three machines, really. And then we had the whole PSTN side of traffic and telephone and handsets and USB-connected headsets and stuff on the right-hand side. And we basically then did a live migration, very similar to what you saw a moment ago through the GUI, but we did that using PowerShell, and there was the ability to continue that demonstration of voice traffic being maintained while that live migration of the link workload moved from one to another. That's pretty cool, to keep the voice traffic up and running, even though we migrated from one machine to another using that Hyper-V migration. And you know how important IP addresses are to things like link. This is a hybrid cloud scenario. This is a classic hosting scenario where you've got customers, you've got site-to-site VPN connections, the gateway kicks in, and so the customer in the blue corporation's got some servers of their own, and now they're connecting to servers that have been virtualized, and the network is virtualized as well in the service provider to get all the benefits that we've already talked about in network virtualization. This is another example, which is F5. F5 is one of our partners in this space, and they actually did a demonstration of Office 365 connecting to local Exchange servers using, again, network virtualization. So on the right-hand side, we had a corporate network, which was connecting red and blue across through Office 365. And we also had a cloud provider who was using similar to the big IP technology to get through the cloud provider on a different set of IP PA addresses through to the Office 365 environment. So a real mix of different technologies there. Public cloud, service provider cloud, private cloud, all coming together for that particular end customer. So this is a quick snapshot of the people that we're working with in the ecosystem, the Brocades, Broadcoms, F5 I've already mentioned. HP talked to them at their stand about what they could offer you in terms of a Hyper-V network gateway. Technology, S-Flow, who's already been referenced at the extensibility switch layer, NEC, Five9 software, and others. So it really gives you a new perspective, I hope, on thinking about how to build these clouds. You know, you're not limited anymore about with those workloads. You can deploy VMs anywhere in the data center because the IPs move. You've got cross subnet live migration allowing for better utilization of your data center resources. You know, you've got much more optimal efficiency in terms of server managers and network managers working together. Your network team is relieved from having to deal with the nightmare of VLANs for every single customer to create isolation. They still have VLANs. We still need that expertise, but it can be applied to migration, management, and store. And all the guests now can be dealt with in a single VLAN environment with NIC teaming and all that sort of stuff as well. So that's pretty cool. Much more scalable. And for the service provider community, we think we break that problem we've had. You know, we've had this license mobility in the market for going on over 12 months, I think it is now, Stephen, since July last year. And one of the barriers has absolutely been that customers want to keep their IP address ranges, and you've seen, in fact, how we can do that. It's pretty cool. We call this software-defined networking. So we're using the magic of software. That's why I joined the company all those years ago. I'm a software engineer by training, computer science degree, wrote compilers. And just to see, used to actually write network definition languages for Honeywell mainframes and ACL protocols for airlines. And to see how we're using this networking technology at another level in the TCP stacks is pretty cool to me. So that we're able to realize the network virtualization, the extensible switch capabilities, but of course working with partners to make all of that possible. So in simple summary, any service, bring your own IP and your own network topologies, no change for the workload owners, any server, so you've got flexible placement, manage VMs separately, network separately, deploy in any data center, whether it's a private data center, a public data center, service provider data center, or even a hybrid data center, a la the F5 example I showed. Cross-premise connectivity supported, and broadcast traffic is minimalized, as you see the reduction in the number of ARPs that hit the wire. If you're interested in more about this, we're really, really lucky here in Australia. We've got 14 of these boot camps worldwide. Four of them will land in Australia in October. So this fiscal year, they're only doing 14. And I guess because you guys have been such a great community in terms of service provider community and SPLA and multi-tenancy, that the corporation has seen fit to land four of those here in Australia. So if you're interested in knowing more about Windows Server in a multi-tenanted world and how to configure that up as a service provider, we've got camps in Sydney, October 10 to 12, and Melbourne, 17 through 19. And if you're interested in database workloads, SQL Server multi-tenancy and how to onboard that and deal with big data and VI, then we've also got camps that precede the cloud infrastructure for the VM hosting camps in the same locations. If you want to know how to register for those events, I've made it really easy. You email me. I didn't get to choose that email alias. It was given to me when I joined 22 years ago. Philme@microsoft.com. Yes, it's a great marketing line. I love going to parties and girls say, what's your... anyway, won't go there. Any other resources you're interested in? Network Virtualization Survival Guide. There's a white paper. There's a blogging entry. There's some PowerShell scripts if you really want to. But please, don't go there. Get System Center SP1. It's in beta now. Download it. Use the network virtualization capabilities to automatically build those policy tables, those maps, the ACLs, etc. in the organization. So I think you've got a better understanding? Yes? Who's got a better understanding? Oh, I haven't got that many T-shirts, damn it. Who's got a better understanding? Excellent, thank you. I hope you've also got a sense of some of the features that I really, really like in Windows Server, the resource metering and quality of service capabilities. And I'm getting the wind up. Please don't forget your evaluation forms. I really hope that you'd be kind enough to give me a good score because I want to do more for service providers. They're a very growing and vigorous community, and it's only by getting a good score that they go, oh, this service providers, they like what they're hearing. They'll put more sessions on for service providers. I've got two this year, and it's fantastic. And I'm really, really happy. I'd like to see three or four next year that this community can get even more information. So put in your evals, and there's also the chance to win a nice little Bluetooth mouse. Channel 9 to learn more, and there has been a session change inside. New Hyper-V has been cancelled and it's been replaced with that WSV-326A, what you need to know to successfully recover Active Directory. Sounds good? At 5 o'clock. If you would like to take a helicopter ride, you know how to do that? You got a tweet. I want to ride in the #WinServerHeli@AUTechEd. Because, and whatever your because of is. Thank you very, very much for taking the time out to spend with me today. It has been my pleasure to be part of TechEd 2012, and I hope you enjoy the rest and enjoy the party tonight. Not too late. Early start time. Thanks.